The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Slam Kinnison, and we're coming to you from the past. Yes, we're coming to you from 2020, although you are listening to this episode in 2021. No, we haven't mastered time travel, because in order to master time travel, you need to master mischief, and no fucking human can actually do that. So the topic of today's episode is we're doing an unscripted, which I'm going to give myself a round of applause as I actually got out of the intro. If you remember our last unscripted episode, I barely made it out of the intro. The topic of this episode is we're going to talk about what is the future of Agile coaching. 2020 was, to have a complete understatement, really weird year. Things went sideways very early on, and it stayed sideways throughout the duration. So what we wanted to do is in this dead week.
I'm not getting this reference. Why did things go weirdly?
All these people are wearing masks, and you used to stay away from.
It was a very normal year.
You used to want to hang out with people who were positive. Now you want to hang out with people who are negative. I don't quite get it, but whatever. We'll just continue on. So again, this is the dead week between Christmas and New Year's. I figured I'd wrangle up a bunch of coaches who are either playing hooky from work or at home with nothing to do. And we're going to talk about what does the future of Agile coaching look like in 2021 and beyond. In order to maintain some semblance of anonymity, everyone has a nickname. I'm not going to reference anyone by their name, by their birth name. If your nickname matches your birth name, I feel really bad for Ernest Blofeld, who was the one talking earlier. And the hope is that maybe we can get some honest opinions out of people. Let's talk about where we think things are going, the good, the bad, or the indifferent. So with me, I have a bunch of guests. I have Rowdy Burns. I have Guy Fieri. I have Buddy Backpacker, Cheryl Underwood, Sam Hamwich, Ernest Blofeld, Cad Wallander, C. Washburn, and Minna Planer. None of you who are listening are going to remember any of these fucking people, but that's fine because we're going to keep going. So the first thing I want to talk about is the elephant in the room, travel. And I'm starting with you, Sam Hamwich. What is travel going to look like for Agile coaching in 2021?
I believe it will consist primarily of going out to the mailbox and back.
Can you travel to the fridge?
Actually, no. I stand corrected. We do have a fridge in our garage. So, yeah. So it'll be primarily to get more half and half and to get the mail.
And if I could jump in.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
I was going to say, if I can jump in, it also includes feeding your Apple Watch by standing up for at least 1 minute every hour.
When I do training classes, we always take a break every hour. We try to take a break at least once an hour. And I always say, you need to move your legs, because if you don't move your legs, the upper half of the body is not going to work. So that, I guess that's technically travel.
So I want to ask, I'm going to ask you, Rowdy Burns. I believe you're not a consultant, but a full-time employee. So what does that look like for you when it comes to the magical traveling Agile coach? Do you think it's going to be more of the same? Is it going to be more coaching indirectly? What are your thoughts?
It's definitely more indirect. Some of the coaching that I do also is with people who literally have to be physically together, like equipment, electrical engineers, and other people that still have to be there as essential workers, whatever their job is. So that type of coaching is interesting. Especially since you're still going to want to do it half remote and still effective. So it's going to change. Is it going to be fully remote? No. But then again, we still don't even know what fully and half remote even means. Like, what half remote, what does that even mean? So it's definitely going to be an ongoing thing. And to be honest, we don't know what it is yet. So
strangely, I mostly agree with Rowdy for the first time in a while.
We have definitely crossed the Rubicon into something completely, completely weird. Along those same lines, I want to go to Buddy Backpacker, and I want to ask Buddy a question. So, Buddy, I know Buddy through Buddy's a good friend of mine. I've known him for years. We had a rant going. He had a rant going today in the Slack channel, which I think is actually worth. I'm going to read it out, and then Buddy, I want you to elucidate.
How unlike Buddy.
his rant is there will always be a need and demand for people who can enter an organization and its human system, quickly understand the human system, and then nudge guide the environment to discover what is helpful to the environment, people, organization, customer, etc. Bold caps at that moment. This is diametrically opposed to and not what the guru prison wardens that we have come across. There's a Matrix reference in here. There's a Mutt and Jeff reference. There's a reference about another guy who's like a prison warden. These people would foist on the unsuspecting as the quote, one true way to agility. So buddy, I know. And then you went, you kept going. You made some, a couple other interesting comments. Thoughts on that. Can we expand on that?
My motivation for that is that I believe where we'll find the need for and the value from people who title themselves as an Agile coach is in understanding the human systems and being able to adapt to that human system and help that human system discover its path forward, as opposed to foisting a predefined path on it. And I see Ernest has just got something he's dying to say.
I feel like Buddy, the most famous backpacker of all the backpackers, I feel like he used a lot, and as someone like me who uses a lot of words, that's something for me to say. He used a lot of words to say coaches need to finally embrace their inner consultant and start consulting more and stop telling. Mm. Coaching is not right. Telling. We need to start mm-hmm. listening and consulting more. And I think maybe he's right.
I think yeah. you're right, but
I agree.
There's a cultural spin, and that's this. And we've encountered this working with clients that are very widely geographically dispersed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes over as many as 13 to 15 time zones apart. And we find that there's some cultural imperatives, like in America, we kind of have a go-getter business culture. That's not true everywhere. I don't think self-organization and self-management culturally works on widely dispersed teams. Mm. It was originally intended for co-located, dedicated teams.
Right.
Who here is on a co-located, dedicated team now? And I think we need to rethink really almost all of agility, which was construed under the idea of co-location, to really a new paradigm that takes into account that not everybody wants the same things that our culture seems to want.
I don't know, Sam. I think this is the year that we really realize that all of those old maxims that we've been teaching as part of the principles and manifesto, some of them are kind of built on a house of sand.
I think you all make valid points. You know, when Ernest Blofeld said, you know, we got to start consulting more and less telling people what to do. Immediately, I thought of that scene from Aliens where Ripley walks into the hangar bay and she goes, "Is there anything I can do?" And the sergeant looks at her and goes, "Well, I don't know. Is there anything you can do?" A lot of times when someone says, "Is there anything I can do?" we tell them what to do. Well, we really should be saying, "Hey, I don't know. Is there anything you can do?" Right, so make it more of a give and take. I forgot where I was going with the next piece. Damn it, too much coffee this morning.
I'll cover for you for a second while you think. So go part of it. That is kind of having a mentoring mindset versus a I'm going to tell you what to do mindset. I think so. It's talking them through. I mean, it's so from the developer side, it's also saying, so why isn't this working? Talk me through what you've done. You know, when you're doing a code review, and then most of the time they can figure out their answer. So it's the old, you know, teaching them to fish. So talk them through questions that help them get their own answers, which helps them learn it more, I think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say you took the words right out of my mouth, going back to the key lesson that we talk about, teach a man a fish and give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teaching the fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And so getting them to have the realization of here's what I've done and what worked, and here's what maybe I should explore, and also look at the things that didn't work and come to their own conclusion on how I can move forward in a better way. Trying something different, trying to really experiment at doing something different as well as doing something better.
Well said, Cheryl. Yeah, like to, so yeah. to So going back to something Rowdy said earlier and Cadwaller, gosh, using these weird names is going to trip me up. So I think that all three of you touched on something that is also something that this year has even further removed, which is like the chasm between FTE and external coach has even further widened. I think we've shown that our stance, I think some of us that have been consulting for a while have seen this, right? So I know the work that Rowdy does. Rowdy has built up a lot of internal collateral, right? Internal, hey, you can trust me. Our paycheck says the same company on it. You can trust me. I know that the work that Cadwaller does is same in that, hey, fellow nerd, fellow coder, fellow whatever, right? Our paycheck says the same thing. We can do this. And I know that that's a really mundane way of putting it, but I think this year has really shown us that that chasm between me as the consultant, Sam as the consultant, right? It is even, and Buddy, right? We're even further apart from those internal stakeholders. And we've had to, like, if I don't have that internal advocate, that internal change agent, like really showing up, like it makes my job 10 times harder doing it remotely. Because when you can't tell from the badge, because we're in the same office, you can't really tell between the FTE versus the external consultant. Whereas when we're all remote and you see my email address says da 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 at some different company, like it's even further much of a chasm. You know what I'm saying?
It makes it easy to make you the other. Right. It's the Minna, Cheryl, I think Lynn Sanity, Buddy Backpacker, and I just finished a book club where we read through Yuval Harari's Sapiens. And one of the lines in Sapiens he talks about is some people just want to be told what to do. Some people just want to be told what to do. So
Cheryl mentioned with the whole feach, to teach a person to fish. Some you know what some clients want? Some clients want to just be handed a fish. Right.
Hand me the fish.
And I think to your point, Blofeld, you said some of the things that we do are kind of built on sand. And I kind of think you're right, because in any enterprise size organization, right, large scale organization, there are going to be plenty of people who want to learn how to fish. There are going to be plenty of people. There are also going to be plenty of people who are just going to say, give me the damn fish. Just give me the fish. And I think we need to realistically turn that mirror back on ourselves as coaches and say, is this person want to learn? I mean, you can try and lead them, but after a couple of attempts, it's like, okay, they don't want to learn how to fish. That's fine. I'll just give them the striped bass and move along. And Buddy, you were going to say something?
Yeah, Slam, your comment there reminded me of a conversation that I had with Lynn Sanity earlier this week. And when you have some people that want to learn, grow, do things differently, other people who, like you say, just want to be told what to do, as change agents and coaches, it's inherent on us to sense and respond to the human system that we're working with. So, Lynn Sanity had a great way to think about this is when you sense that, what we need to do going forward is we need to change our language and change our expectations, and then also manage the expectations of the organization around us. One of the things that I hope and pray is different is that the big bang uniform, everybody doing the same thing, kind of agile rollout type, whatever, is a thing of the past. I hope we can get away from that.
At my last job, we were great believers in using personality inventory tools for team building, for interviewing. And I think that there's an extrapolation of that that we can also use in coaching. And I think we kind of learn about it, but there's a presumption out there, I think, that people desire to be coached. And I think that we've missed the mark on that. I think when we come to an organization and say, oh, hello, we're coaches, the primary reaction we get is, what the hell do I need a coach for?
Right.
The what?
Right,
and,
right.
And I think we've done as coaches, and I hope we do a better job in 2021, is to set the expectations much more reasonably about what coaching an individual, a team of teams, or an enterprise, how coaching can impact that is based strictly on the personality of the coaching target. That's why when you go to a team as a coach, one of the things we learn to do is kind of, I actually coach a very similar to the way that I play poker. When I sit down at a table, I assign everybody at the table a sort of personality type, and it helps me remember how to deal with them when I'm betting with them. And I do the same thing.
You play poker differently.
And it helps because, yeah, there are some people who are really, really good at what they do. So long as they are given a checklist of clear and uncompromised instructions that will never fail, they're great at what they do. Some people hate that. Some people bristle at the notion of being given a checklist or being given an algorithm to solve. And they need to stretch that creativity. And the trick is to figure out who's on, you know, what sort of side of that personality fence and deal with them accordingly. And I think that you can attribute many of those personality traits to cliques, which I mean by cliques are not teams, but like sort of natural collections of people that form inside an organization. It can be applied to teams. It can be applied to teams of teams, and it can be applied to organizations. So your coaching stance has to depend completely on the personality type, as it were, of the coaching target, whether it's an organization or an individual.
Well said, Sam. Well said. So I have a one-liner here. I reached out to a buddy of mine. His name is Barry Sanders, and he went on a bit of a tirade over Slack about this whole question because he couldn't make the meeting. And he threw out a whole bunch of one-liners, and one of them I really want to talk about. So a couple of his one-liners were the allergy to the word agile is only growing. Do we salvage it or do we burn it all down? Do people want true coaching or just be told what to do? Is SAFE going to swallow everything? If so, let's just find new careers. Here's a hot take he had. Agilists like to think that they get paid well because they have expertise and help people reach new insights. Are we sure the real reason isn't because in so many cases, they're the same people in the same spots as project managers who also historically got paid well? And then he writes, har, har, har. Most smart people learn about and pull from wherever they can. What if this whole game is like politics and that people don't want elevated consciousness, but instead want an easy story to follow and a team to pick? Is that just a human inevitability?
So let me start off by saying a couple comments off that, because I was going to step in and say a lot of the coaching that seems to be going on, at least for me personally in my situation, would be very little has anything to do with really agile. Like I have managers now that are just accepting the fact that you don't have to physically see somebody to know they're working. Like that's the kind of change that's going on. So that's one story in itself. But the other thing that's interesting is people that have listened to these podcasts or have been coaching or, you know, this, all the content we're talking about isn't new problems. They're exacerbated problems, really. So it's just interesting to see that, like, we've had several conversations and podcasts on a lot of these topics. It's just now becoming apparent and being forced to be addressed almost at this point, which is an interesting thing. But I just find it very interesting that all those comments that were just made, I almost agree that very little of what I've been doing to help managers, teams, everything has little to do with Agile. It's how to communicate, how to clear, how to visualize stuff. It's just general coaching.
How to deal with other people.
I think Rowdy just jumped in because that comment started off by making fun of SAFE. And so he's like, now I have my lane.
How odd. Barry Sanders he went on a bunch more, but I'm going to start with you, Lynn Sanity. And I'm going to ask you the last line he has in this long list of rants. His last question is, and to that point, Rowdy, Do we actually, as coaches, add more value by being pseudo-therapists when we're actually not qualified? Is this unethical? Should we become qualified? Should we change the perception of what coaches are? And I'm going to start with you, Lynn Sanity. What do you think?
I really think that the word coach caught on for, and I don't think it was bad when it caught on, but I think it became the way to earn more money. And so everybody started using it without appreciating or respecting what the term means. And the other thing that's interesting is I am a certified coach, and I have a coaching client who has asked me, she actually says that term is very confusing to her. She played college sports. She said, you don't do anything like my coach did. She said, you do something different and it's wonderful, but it's not like what my coach did. So I think the term coach is confusing to a lot of people. Since I went down my journey to get certified as a professional coach, I realized that I'm changing my language a lot. And I'm saying to people, oh, I can provide some consulting on that. I can provide some process expertise on that. Oh, I can provide some training. Sure, I can mentor you on that. Like, I'm using the specific terms of what it is I'm doing with people. And it is confusing to people because, like, the teams that I've worked with, we worked together for 2 years now, and they're used to me. They're like, oh, let's ask our coach about this. So they're used to that. And now that I'm changing the language on them a little, they're like, okay, how is that different than what you did before? But, there are a few people that I've introduced the coaching kind of agreement with, like, this is where you have all the answers and I help you find your truth. And some people love it. And I have a couple people that I worked very successfully with as a quote unquote agile coach, which where I was basically more of a teacher and a mentor. Who they read the description of coaching and they're like, no, I just need you to tell me what to do. The whole, they don't even want to learn how to fish. And so then I know in that relationship, back to the comment about different personalities, that person is not in a place to find their own truth about this. They're just trying. And frankly, all of these people are coming from a perspective of trying to survive, trying to keep their job, mm-hmm. trying to not fail at what they do, trying, they aren't in a position and a situation, and maybe we look at, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. They're dealing with some security needs that are way below self-actualization, and coaching is really a lot more, professional coaching is a lot more about self-actualization.
Can I tag on to that?
Yeah,
can
please
I tag
do.
On to that? Yeah, so, hey, hold on, we're not using real names. Come on now, look at my, my name is Ernest Blofeld.
I said Ernest.
Oh, I thought you said my real name, my bad.
No, I didn't.
They both end in an...
Yeah.
there's been a lot of instability with jobs this year, right? So companies mm-hmm. have cut back, companies mm-hmm. have expanded. Right. There are some IT organizations that are, most of us, I think all of us work in IT orgs. Right. So like IT orgs are expanding and contracting and changing and shifting and networks are moving. And so because of that instability, like we've always represented we as a like and I hate the like I'm with you, Linsanity. I hate the term coaching. I immediately shift my role to away from that term as soon as I'm introduced in that mm-hmm. in organizations. And we've always kind of flipped tables over, even if it's politely or gently, we've yeah. upended norms, right? But mm-hmm. because this year introduced so much more instability,
yeah,
we represent your jobs in trouble. And right. I feel like that's yeah. made us even more abrasive, us external folks that come in, or even if you're just an I-9 like independent person, or you come on as an FTE, like regardless whether you're a contractor, FTE, I-9 mm-hmm. whatever, right, you represent you're in trouble wherever you're at, like whatever you're doing, yeah. right? Mina, yeah. what do you think about that?
We're like the Bobs in Office Space.
Yeah,
that's how they look at us. Yeah,
just yeah. make sure well you get said. The GPS report done.
It's kind of true, and I mean, let's look at. So I'm a longtime FTE, right? I've usually been a full timer pretty much everywhere I go. And when it comes, Blofeld was talking about cutbacks, changing budget, contractions in the business world, right? One of the first things to go is usually a consultant, right? It's an easy way to shave money is to get rid of your consultants, yep. Which if anybody is reading the Tame Flow book by Steve Tendon, that's a shout out that the solution isn't change your consultants, is find your bottleneck and your constraint. We'll talk about that in a future episode. But if people want to shave the consultants, well, then how do you expect to actually be successful? Because you're bringing people in who have a unique skill that you don't have in-house, right? It's like I had a conversation with someone where, they know what to do. They know how to do DevOps. And my response was, well, why aren't they doing it now? And I got a whole bunch of blank stares. And it's not to insult this person. It's a human thing, right? We don't know what we don't know. And until we open our mind, Buddy Backpacker, I'm going to make a reference that you're going to get, until we create the holding, the environment of holding, where we can be open-minded to a new way of working, you're going to continue working in the same way you've always done. And part of the role of an agile coach or an agile swami or whatever you want to call them, right, is to open people's minds to go in a different direction. And that's, I actually think it's a disservice to some of our enterprises that we work in when they start sacking coaches, saying, oh, we don't need coaches. We have scrum masters who all have three teams.
Well, Slam, what do you think happens when we go into an organization and we say, oh, agile teams, they're self-managing and self-organizing and empowered to a manager. We say this.
Right.
We say, oh, by the way, you're a manager and your team's going to be self-managing from now on. What do you think that manager takes away from that?
Yeah, to Blofeld's point about job security, and Lynn Sanity said the same thing, right? All they hear out of that is, I don't have a space. There's no space for me. And again, we're all people. I hate the term resources. We're all heartbeats, right? We all have things that we want to, families we want to provide for. And when that becomes a question is, am I going to be able to provide for my family? That's where people will do things that are probably the not right thing to do, but it's the best thing for them to ensure continued survival. And I get it, right? I can't fault anybody for that.
Many have referenced this, like this year has accelerated the things that were already happening. It has just light sped everything that was already going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
especially if there's any dysfunction going on.
So controversial question then. I think Sam Hammond, you mentioned this earlier. So if the Scrum framework does promote a lot of self-organizing teams and that type of collaboration, it's been known for 10 plus years how teams form and go through that phase. And are we doing a disservice in the general coaching community to continue to use a framework then and promote that in these certain times?
Rowdy, it's even worse. We're actually telling organizations that applying those principles to their entire company will also work.
Yeah. And that's so the future of agile.
Magnifying itself. I'm not talking about any particular framework at all, but you know, who came up with this idea that you can apply to 45,000 people the same rules you can apply to 5 to 9 people? Who came up with that exactly?
There is science. Let's not ignore the fact that there's actual science behind some of the
there
things.
But there's the point, some of it, right? And to Sam's point, right? And Lynn Sanity, I'm going to reference Sapiens again because we just went through it, right? But, you know, a person is rational. People aren't. People in the aggregate are not rational, right? We don't make decisions based upon ration and thinking. We make decisions based on, I'm going to quote Uncle Dave Snowden here, pattern recognition, where we default into a state where I recognized this before, I went left and I survived and the tiger didn't eat me, so I'm going to keep going left. So to your point, trying to apply things at the meta level, at the portfolio level, I'm going to steal my safism, that we were trying to do at the team level, sometimes it is incongruent. And back to that whole kingdom built on sand, we're kind of deceiving ourselves. Cadwallader, I want to go to you. I want to ask you a question. And I'm going to base it off of a Bernie Sanders rant I got again yesterday. I really pissed this guy off. I feel bad. He's probably running around right now outside, just mad that he can't be on the call. He started going on, and here's his rant. So on the future of agile coaches, company valuations are a function of both numbers and narrative. Both are supporting an overall move to a recurring subscription revenue model. And he goes, think Netflix, Peloton, or any annoying stupid thing your parents fail to cancel and it keeps billing them. Through our pragmatic context appreciating lens, we like to treat all these methods frameworks like a toolbox, but in the way of the world, it would indicate that safe is the future because it has the most profitable sustained growth numbers in narrative. Heavy installation, recurring subscription revenues, and plenty of case studies and quantitative KPI improvement to make its case. Is safe the future of agile and agile coaching?
Nope. Next.
Can we go in there a little bit? Cadwallader, what do you got to say? Is it the future or no?
So I guess the thing that I've always said is that, you know, frameworks are frameworks that can be built upon for the needs of the organization. So it's not just here's a hammer and now everything's a nail. And I think that's one of the big mistakes that people make. they latch on to a specific framework, and then they try to push that framework on every single business. And that's not a viable solution. Businesses are different, people are different. And so you have to look at what's the direction of the company, where is it heading, and will this support it, right? It's, you're in a supporting role. How do I support what the company is trying to do? Not how do I come in and make them do what I want.
Exactly.
The other piece I was going to throw earlier, so I'm going to say it now, is I think a lot of people miss the actual relationship portion of the job. So right now I sit in a virtual C-suite position at 20 something companies. And the thing there that you have to do is you have to understand the people that you're dealing with. What are their motivations? And then you work with that and you also build relationships. So when I have calls with them, my first question is, hey, how are the kids? Or, you know, hey, how did the sports team do? It's not, hey, okay, here's my point number one, I want to drive home, right? So it's very consulting, coaching, mentoring, managing. It's all about relationship. You got to build the trust first before you can actually provide a solution, even if it's the right solution.
I love with his very deliberate, like he takes my Southern charm and makes it even more deliberate. I love how Cadwaller just big timed all of us in that just now. Did y'all notice that?
Yes. Ryan just dropped the C-suite bomb.
And yeah. It doesn't matter whatever you do. If you just use the term C-suite with whatever C-suite. You're doing, you're like, oh man.
Okay, wait. But I don't want to discount. I don't want to discount what he said just because he used a powerful term. Because I agree with that. I think so. I'm gonna call it.
Hold on. Why are you making this practical and reasonable? Like I was trying to obfuscate the fact that he's way smarter than Rowdy in everything he just said.
The metric of success
is to figure out how many Lamborghinis are owned in Boulder, Colorado.
Lynn Sanity owns 7. Okay, so let's get off the table.
Lamborghinis are high on my priorities.
Lynn Sanity, so, you were saying.
I remember you can only drive one at a time.
I think Cadwaller made a lot of good points. I don't want to lose that. I want to ask a question to all of you, taking us almost full circle back to where we started with the future of Agile coaching, right? So Blofeld, you talked about, you know, cost cutting, and we talked about, you know, changing budgets and contractions. Is the future of Agile coaching more of a technical nature? Are we going to finally double down into the tech practices? And here's why I ask. Everybody I know that is not a consultant, that's an FTE in an organization going through a transformation, they have their process coaches, which are their safe disciples. And then they have their technical coaches, which is the people who actually understands how to build a fucking CI/CD pipeline, right? And I think if I'm going, and I've always looked at it as, no, an Agile coach should be both, right? You should be doing both. So is that going to be the future? And Rowdy, I'm going to start with you because I know you work in a very highly technical space. Do you think that where companies are going to look and say, well, don't give me some mutant that can tell me how to stand up a release train. They're going to tell me somebody who can stand up a release train and also understands the backbone of microservices with infrastructure as a service. What do you think?
I will say that if you throw in the word coaching and leave the word agile out of it, those things will still exist and be needed. I don't know what they're going to be called, but if you start throwing the word agile back into the mix on what people's perception of it is, very technical. That's where I think it's going to go. So if you keep using the words like agile this or I want to do an agile more speed, it's going to be very technical, very process driven on the software delivery side, practice side. But if you start to kind of dovetail away from the word agile, I still think all of those things are going to be valid. I just don't think agile is going to be used the word.
Blofeld, you got 45 seconds for it to hit the dump button.
You said several very inflammatory things in there, right? Which is, again, I hate that I have to become the, can we please stop blaming Safe for everything that's wrong in the industry? Like, the insanity continues between you and Rowdy and sometimes Sam. Buddy mostly is in my camp in this, I think. Like, the reason why, like, you all got us to stop blaming Safe and for everything that's wrong with organizations. But you talked about setting up release trains. Like, you say that, like, all that I do is process coaching.
No,
like,
I didn't. Don't take it personally. Don't project, Ernest.
You said counseling on the side. Disciples. You're like, Safe pays for my new house that I just bought, right? So, like, I'm sorry that I'm cashing checks based upon that framework, but it is. But can I tell you that as an SPC in my current client, I've spent 75% of my conversations on technical practices. I am not a tech coach. I have had to become a tech coach to make the company that I am consulting for better. Like, it is not like to, like, I hate agreeing with Rowdy, but Rowdy is right in that if you want to say you're an agilist, you have to have tech,
and,
you know, tech coaching is part of your practice.
I'm gonna go to Rowdy, but I just want to clarify my statement, okay? Right, and this is why I consistently I line Safe up as the straw man punching bag, and here's why. Looking around at this Zoom call, right, anybody who's listening should know we record via Zoom. I know all of you on a personal level. I know all of you are not the type of person who went out, attended a Safe class, misrepresents your credentials in order to get in the door as an agile coach, where all you know is one kind of thing, right? And when I look around the room, you're all people who are truly interested in growing their craft, right? But I guess the challenge to you, Blofeld, is come up for me with a term that describes these imposter coaches that have taken a Safe course, build themselves out as agile coaches, and then actually give our practice a bad name as all of us are out there trying to learn and grow and improve. And I'll go back to Barry Sanders's rant. You know, he talks about blah, 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 Safe is the future of agile. Consequently, there will be a bifurcation of coaches. Agile coaches will henceforth be associated with Safe. And then there will be coaches who are not into Safe will drop the agile part of their title. These agile Safe coaches will then go on to brand themselves as senior conglomerate coaches. And then he throws in a pot shot. I hope I don't insult anybody with this one, where he says, as a bonus, we should point out that this further bolsters the case that Safe is to agile what CrossFit is to exercise. Nothing novel, acting like the authority of its domain, packaged together behind a tiered paywall and an implementation plan that includes adding more signups to a recurring subscription revenue model. Now, I got to give Barry Sanders credit. When he gets going, he gets going. I'm not going to agree or disagree with his rant.
But it's a cult.
But let me point out, though, that what you said is, to Ernest, give me something for these people who take their Safe class and go blah. So you just did it again. Honestly, that was my point earlier. It's any framework that is grabbed and said, this is the answer to every company.
We did it for 15 years with Scrum.
Absolutely.
15 years with Scrum. Everything that we're knocking Safe with right now has happened with Scrum before. Yep. Trust me, all of the CSTs and PSTs say the exact same thing.
This was my same rant early on when I moved to the state that I'm in now. I guess North Carolina is not going to kill my identity. I moved to North Carolina and was looking for a job. And it was all about, oh, do you have your MCSE cert? Do you have your MCSE cert? No, I don't, but I have 7 years of experience. Oh, sorry, you got to have your cert. Okay. So it's the same thing. It's, companies do it the opposite way. Oh, do you have your Safe cert? Well, then I can use you. If you don't, I can't. Well, okay, but what's the experience? So I actually don't have any certs. I do have years of experience of mentoring is what I call it. So
Cadwalder, you bring up an interesting point, right? I will cop to consistently blaming Safe, but I almost think we've almost become results of the system that we're in, right? Where these companies, like your example, right? They used to just look for PMPs. Now they look for SPCs. So unfortunately, we kind of have to fall into that bucket, even though we don't want to, I guess.
My favorite is when they claim to be SPCs and it turns out, can't find them in the directory anywhere. Isn't that strange?
I haven't had that happen.
back in my earlier years, right, when I still had hair, and Blofeld probably still had hair, I actually took a class at Villanova in Mastering Project Management, right? And my instructor made the remark, which I've carried with me my entire career. He said, I know project managers who don't have a PMP, who could launch the space shuttle with two pencils and a slide ruler. I also know project managers who have a PMP who couldn't hit water falling out of a boat in the middle of the Atlantic. And that is the analogy I always make in the back of my head, right? And I think we all are victims, to your point, Cadwalader, of the system we're in, where sometimes you need those three stupid letters to get through the automated HR resume scraping system, where it doesn't necessarily preclude any intelligence, right?
So I think it's kind of interesting that we say, you know, we've been doing Scrum so long. You know, Agile really is 20 plus years, if you really want to count the pre-manifesto years. And before that, there was a whole other round of this. Maybe you guys were not around for the UML, Rational Unified Process days.
Yeah. But
in the 80s and 90s, that was the savior. That was the thing that was going to save us all. Now, when I mention my UML credentials to people, I don't seem to get much respect for that. But I can tell you at the time, literally, the greatest minds in the
Rodney IT Dangerfield, industry, huh?
Right. Greatest minds in the IT industry at the time got together and developed UML and the Rational Unified Process. And it was blessed as the answer to all of our woes. If only we do this, everything will be awesome. And now the only thing that remains from that entire process is class diagrams. And I think that that's fitting. And the reason is because nobody who ever created UML ever wrote a line of code, ever built a piece of software in their whole life. And I think we're seeing a lot of the same thing. We're seeing people come to coach people who have never been successful at doing the thing that they're coaching people to do. And I don't know how we sieve those people out of our community, but we have to be more active in saying, you know, yeah, credentials, capital C, are important. Little C credentials, also important. And I don't mean to knock on people who aren't coding, but what makes you able to coach someone in the technical realm if you don't have any experience, if you've never pushed something through DevOps? But that's, you can do it, but you bring something different to the table and what I think is needed. And I think safe, all right, Ernst, we got your point. And I think
never safe, written a line of code in my life, and I coach technical practices all the time.
But you coach technical practices, which is not the same as teaching people how to write code. They're not.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's not my job.
Okay, that is not your job. It's not your job. You know, people say, oh, well, Mitch, how do I know whether something is a class or something's an interface? It's like, well, you have to freaking know. And that's not something you can be taught. Right. It's something you have to learn, all right?
But I don't need to be a black belt to teach lean practices either.
You don't need to be a black belt to knock somebody out.
The quote of the episode right there. So Rowdy Burns put something in the chat, which I think is very accurate, where he said, Six Sigma people are going to listen to this and say, well, we're always going to be needed. And you know what? That is the honest truth. You're always going to need some Six Sigma process gurus. You're always going to need someone who's got project management, like understands the theory. You're always going to need someone who understands SAFe and how Agile works in theory. It's the application piece where most of us on this call make our bread and butter. And that's where I guess my frustration lies now that I'm having like a moment here. Or Blofeld, you got 30 seconds.
So you what you're saying is that the principles are always needed. The term and wrapper that we put around them will always change, which is why Scrum begat SAFe and Six Sigma begat, right? Any, you know, pro Kanban or whatever, right? Those ideas and things, the wrapper we put around them, right? Scrum coach became Agile coach. Yeah, begat Gills, which I'm doing with my hands. Thank you, Rowdy.
I might actually push out the video on this and just obfuscate everybody's video.
Wonderful.
Talking emoji. So we are quickly
black
approaching
bar right here.
and modulate everybody's voice. So we are quickly approaching time. First of all, I want to thank all of you for hopping in again the dead week between Christmas and New Year's and joining. I know we could talk about this conversation easily for another 3-4 hours. I think it was just great for all of us to get together and break Agile bread in the time between Christmas and the New Year, where the ball, I'm pretty sure, is going to hit 3. It's going to, you know, we're going to count down. It's going to go 5, 4, 3, 3, three, four, five, six. And the ball's going to go right back up. And here we are in 2021. So for those, for everyone on this call, Rowdy Burns, Guy Fieri, who's been quiet and with us in spirit, Buddy Backpacker, Cad Wilder, Washburn, Sam Hamwich, Ernest Blofeld, Lynn Sanity, Minna Planner, Cheryl Underwood, Mr. Clean, and Beethoven have also been here, not speaking, but just contributing in the chat. I want to thank all of you for taking your time out. On behalf of everyone here, I want to thank all of our listeners. We have a hell of a year planned for you. We've got a whole bunch of episodes lined up already. I believe first out the gate after this episode is going to be Gil Broza talking about Agile for non-software teams. I'll give you the cliff notes. Just buy the damn book. You'll get a lot of mileage out of it. Also, we have Jonathan Rasmussen joining us early in the year to talk about his new book, Competing with Unicorns, which I think is the opening salvo in the post-agile world. We have Pliny Resnick and Jamie Dobson coming on from Container Solutions to talk about cloud-native transformation. Rowdy Burns, I might recruit you to be on that one, because so maybe we can throw out some big words there. And we have a whole bunch of other irons in the fire, more panel
me
shows like this.
Me making fun of Rowdy at any point in time I try.
He's the most technical guy I know. And I'm not getting his partner, what's his name, Hans on. Hans is but much. But again, I want to thank all of you for listening. I want
to
thank
you
for that's exactly the reference. Thank you, Merman. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everyone who turned in all last year and made us so successful. I'm looking forward to another in what is our fifth year of success. Once again, I want to thank everybody for joining. This is Slam Kinnison with the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.
Wash your hands.